This week on The Dark Multiverse of Stephen King, it's Big Driver, a tidy little tale of revenge directly from Cat's bedroom to you, with only a couple of stops along the way for things like book signings, flat tires, and multiple premeditated murders. Now, listen to this.
Is it almost done?
Well, tell you what. How about instead of changing your tire? What if I screw you? You bitch.
Don't kill
you
me.
You whiny whore bitch.
Please don't.
Gosh sakes.
Hello, Kat.
Hello, Brad Munson.
You're Kat Bentley Shike, last time I checked.
Yes, and you are Brad Munson, the lovely and wonderful.
Have been for damn near 65 years.
I love it. By the time, your birthday's coming up.
By the time this comes out, I will have passed my 65th
year. We have to do something
year.
For your birthday, something haunted.
Well, we're going to do something real soon after. We're going to go see Pet Cemetery,
Absolutely. The remake. Absolutely.
The Saturday it comes out, or the day, first Saturday after it comes out.
So that'll be your birthday present until we decide to do something.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm trying to avoid thinking too much about it. The Medicare people keep calling me. That's the worst part.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I get calls from, I guess by California law, you have to talk to your insurance company and you have to talk to Medicare to see what's the best option. I mean, it's to protect
really?
You. Yeah, it's all real strange. But so you get almost daily reminders. Oh, look, you're getting old. Just want to remind you.
I think that happened when I, after I left college, because, you can no longer be on your parents' mm-hmm. insurance and all that. And I was on my grandmother's. And I kept getting these weird calls and weird things in the mail. And I was like, I'm not old yet. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I know. It starts when you're 55 and you start getting the AARP stuff. And then, and also, I think it's then or at 60, you start getting annual letters from Social Security saying, if you retire now, this is how much you'll get from Social Security.
Oh.
They send you one every year. I've gotten mine for this year already.
Wow.
And it sucks. And anyway.
Are you an AARP member?
Actually, I was for a while because you get great travel discounts.
I was just going to say. When
I was traveling a lot on my own tab, you just go in and say AARP, and it's like $20 off or 10% off almost every major hotel chain right away.
That's great.
That alone was worth the deal. Now I just have other companies pay for me to go. And that's it. I just returned from New York City, where I spent a week in bitter cold weather.
And but you loved it.
It was, no, I did not.
And not the weather, but you love New York.
New York is great to visit, but by the end of my week there, coming home, I was reminded why it is I like living in Los Angeles and always will. I reacquired my ability to walk on icy sidewalks almost immediately.
My God.
Didn't even fall down.
I would fall everywhere. You know me, I'm a fucking klutz. I'm always breaking shit.
I spent
left
a couple
right.
of winters long before you were born in Boston and learned all of the ways, but I really haven't. I think once since then when I've gone to New York, it'd have to have been in the winter. And holy moly, it was 28 degrees when I got there. And I was walking around Times Square for like 2 hours looking at things and enjoying
fun.
It. But then I had a nice warm hotel room to go back to. So.
Were your ears chilly?
I had all the appropriate
clothing. See, I don't have any of the appropriate snow clothing. Like right now with Mammoth having dumped so much snow, all my friends are going up there. And I said to the husband, I'm like, maybe we should take a drive up there, but I don't have any clothes for it, and we don't have snow chains. So basically, we can just go up and kind of look at some snow and then turn around and come back and not get out of the car.
Pretty much since I left Boston in 1976, I have not. The snow holds no joy for me. Apparently, I don't like any kind of inclement weather. I write horror books about rain.
Right.
I curse the snow. Mm-hmm. It's just like damp around here right now. And
I hate
that.
I know you do.
I want 90-degree arid weather.
Move back to Riverside, you bastard.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. Jesus. So anyway, this is the Dark Multiverse of Stephen King. And now we're talking about Big Driver.
Yeah.
This is heavy. Really isn't as much about cars as it seems to be, but that was what it was called, and they're certainly
well. The one
part
line
of
he's so big that it's not like you're riding in the car, but wearing it. So that's basically the only thing.
Of course, there is one of the characters in this is
Tom Tom,
which is interesting because it's like a dead technology now. Yeah. Anybody under our age and your wouldn't even remember that weird little period of time when it was so weird to have a thing in your car that talked and now
told you where to go. Everybody navigated.
Now you don't even think about it anymore. It's between Siri and
your phone and maps. And
I by the way have set my phone in the car when I use it for directions. Mm-hmm. It talks to me with an Australian accent.
Really?
Yeah.
I want to get Morgan Freeman's voice to tell me directions. That would be freaking awesome.
I want to get an app that's sarcastic so that when I get the deal, then I like miss a turn or something. It says, what the hell is wrong with you, buddy? Turn around.
Hey, dumbass. Idiot. You missed that turn.
Yeah, I can't wait. One of these days, someone's going to do a smart-ass Siri and I'll be set. Until then. So, Big Driver.
Very serious. Very, very serious. Heavy. It wasn't emotionally triggering for me, but as a woman and a feminist, it's one of those things where it's like I have so much empathy and just, you know, ugh.
And it's interesting, we talked about we may not ever actually do Gerald's Game because it's affecting.
It's too much,
But this
that
one.
That and Dolores Claiborne, I don't think we can do either one of those.
Those are the
it's
ones that
much,
I know bother you a lot. And
do.
I don't blame you. And this one, more than I remembered, one of the things is it was a TV movie. It was actually made for Lifetime.
What?
Big Driver originally showed on Lifetime in 2014.
Oh, my God.
I think it's the only Stephen King property that premiered and was made by Lifetime, but it was. So a lot of the rough edges of the novella, which came out 4 years earlier than that in 2010 in Full Dark, No Stars, that's a little rougher
than
the movie.
The movie is very good at hitting the points, in my opinion. It hits all the points, you know, that it needs to make the story go forward and to make it cohesive and to make it interesting.
Mm-hmm,
but there's so much Stephen King graphic.
It's pretty soft and kind of arm's length. And that's actually one of my criticisms of the movie. It's not that it's bad. There's a lot of professionals doing their job. But when you realize it was a TV movie, it was Lifetime. It was their version of a revenge story.
Right.
Completely off the subject. If you want to see a really great revenge story,
please tell.
Revenge. It's a movie on Shudder right now.
Is it?
Yeah.
What year?
And brand new, or this year, 2018, it might have come out. Really graphic, bloody, weird, strongest woman character you've seen in years.
Is it like they did three of them? I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah, it is a revenge. It is the same sort of thing. Okay, she's assaulted and she survives and comes back and wreaks havoc.
Good.
Basic,
I like that
whole
shit.
Revenge deal.
I like the revenge part of it.
But it's really very, I mean, if anyone likes that sort of story and they really want to go about as far extreme as Big Driver doesn't, revenge on Shudder.
Oh, it makes up for it.
This is kind of soft at the edges.
Big Driver is about a woman named Tess. She's an author, and she...
Yet another one. Like King never writes about writers, usually, but this one time.
Yeah, just this one time, and it's a woman writer.
Of cozy mysteries, female, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, she's a writer of this old lady knitting club that basically solves mysteries.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she wants to do something more interesting, but she's really happy with the money that's made her, and she's a single woman, and she, you know, is working on her nest egg for retirement. Very, you know, she has a good friendship with her neighbor. They're like besties and take care of each other and look out for each other. She has a cat named Fritz, and she last minute gets asked to do a speaking engagement because another author canceled at a library out of town. She goes there, she does a speaking engagement, and this woman, Ramona, gives her better directions, faster directions on the way back. Mm-hmm. And she says, oh, that's great. And so Ramona programs it in to Tom Tom,
who's a little talking device in a very mechanical male voice.
Yes. And she runs over a bunch of wood that has nails in it, pulls over, you know, zombie baker's band goes by, they don't help. A truck comes by, a big truck with a bigger guy inside of it, gets out, asks to help her. And then she happens to notice in the bed of his truck that there's the exact same
boards with nails in them.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was a setup, and he basically just assaults this woman so horribly. I mean, it's the rape is so graphic and long. And
yeah, and you know, we probably won't do a straight comparison of the two, because in fact Richard Christian Matheson, who wrote the screenplay, stays plot point for plot point really close to the book, to the novella. So it's more a matter of emphasis and focus than it is plot.
Yeah.
I don't really think there's any major change that I can think or omission from the novella, which goes back to our standing theory that his novellas adapt better than his novels.
Agreed.
And this is another example from a pure kind of technical adaptation standpoint. This is very sincere. Point
Triss
for point
is so great.
Maria Bello.
She's so perfect to play Tess. And you know, we've seen her in other things where she, you know, has
say about her. But let's finish the on the plot.
Just doing the plot. Our spoiler. So basically, after all this, he grabs her. He thinks that she's dead. He's choking her. She plays dead. He takes her into a culvert and leaves her, and she's so terrified to come out. But when she finally does start trying to escape the culvert and get out, she finds other women's dead bodies and a girl's dead body in there.
Some old, some new. It's like it's been going on for a while.
She's able to make her way back to the bar where the Zombie Baker band had been headed towards, and she finds a payphone, which, you know.
Yeah, those were the days.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom and payphones.
Yeah, she didn't want to go beat up and half naked.
It was hilarious.
This
is only 5 years ago. It's not like this was made in the 50s. 5 years ago, and already technologies are almost laughable by current standards.
Exactly.
Oh, look, there's a payphone.
It's cute. When I see payphones now, I always, it's so rare, I'll pick it up and see if there's any dial tone. Of course, there never is. There usually isn't even a phone attached.
A cord attached anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So she makes her way. She gets a chauffeur to drive her home who asks no questions, which she's so grateful for. She gets home. She has all this internal struggle, and she makes up these voices in her head like most writers do. They hear, you know, her cat Fritz is talking to her and the dead girls are talking to her and all this about, you know, should she go to the police or not? She's so ashamed. She's worried about the headlines and the tabloids.
Yeah, it's interesting to me that at least in terms of both book and movie, her shame is almost secondary to the practical considerations that she's a writer, a minor celebrity.
And that she might have been asking for it.
Well, but also it's going to blow up and now people aren't going to remember her for her books. They're going to remember her for this rape. So it's an interesting, it's not just the normal kind of cliched, I'm ashamed, what did I ask for? It's my own fault. Never really buys in a lot of that. She was stupid to let a stranger on the road help her with a tire, but beyond that,
but not really, because she was in the middle of nowhere. Her
phone
wouldn't
any choices.
Work.
Exactly. But I liked it in a way that they didn't go to the straight cliche that I'm so ashamed I can't tell anybody.
Right.
She had reasons, good reasons you can argue
about.
But in her head, she had good logical reasons not to tell anybody, not even her best friend.
Right, exactly. She lies and says that she tripped down the stairs over the cat. And, you know, I mean, of course she should have gone to the police, but it wouldn't have made such a good story because she ends up having her cat voice and her, you know, different voices that she hears from the things around her and her inanimate friends. And they start asking, well, what if it wasn't an accident? So she starts doing investigation on Ramona and realizes that she maybe have been set up by Ramona. And she starts doing an investigation and finds out that there's these brothers, right?
Yeah, her sons.
That are her sons. And one of them is the rapist. And so she says, well, I'm just going to start out by putting my gun in my pocket. I'm going to go over to Ramona's. If she looks shocked to see me, then I know that it's true. But if not, and from there, it just goes into this whole fucking revenge thing. She kills fucking Ramona. She fucking goes I wish in the movie that but it would not have been able to be done, I don't think, in the movie. But in the book, she shoots the one guy and realizes that it's the brother and not him. And she feels so horrible, but she's like, I have to go and finish this. So she goes and she kills the one that actually raped her. Mm-hmm. He thinks that he sees a ghost, which is a great scene in the book. It makes you feel so fucking like, yes, you know? And then she fucking murders his ass. Then her voices in her head start asking her, well, how would he have known, you know, all the research that they did, the father had committed suicide. Did he know something about his sons? And how would the one brother have done it? They own this trucking company.
Yeah. The other not have known?
Exactly. So she goes back over to the brother's house when he's dead and she starts going through his shit and finding the trophies. So the one guy is the rapist and the other one is like the voyeur. He wants to collect the trophies that the brother did. He won't do it.
Yeah. And for me, I got to tell you from a storytelling standpoint, that was my least favorite part. Well, I think it would have been way more interesting if she did accidentally kill him and he was clueless. Or
I felt better about
it. It was so obvious. The evidence you found made it so obvious that she was guiltless. There was no ambiguity that maybe he knew, maybe he didn't. Did that bother her later? No, it was pretty clear almost the minute she walks into his place. Oh, yeah, pictures, trophies. He knew about it, too.
Well,
he deserved
to
die.
She had to search his house first, because first she writes a confessional at the one mm-hmm. brother's house, the rapist right. brother that she kills. She writes a full-blown five-page confession before, you know, Tom, the voice in her head, and Fritz start talking to her. And saying, are you sure he wasn't involved? When she goes over, she has to search his whole fucking house. She's like, where do guys keep things? Under their fucking bed. You know, where do little big boys, yeah. you know, keep yeah. their shit? So she finds her purse with the, you know, tag with her name ripped out of it in her mm-hmm. Kate Spade purse. And so she takes that, takes any evidence that links anything to her. And, you know, but she finds this, the part that got me. I mean, it's horrible all the way around. But, I mean, great book. Horrible topic. She finds a bloody duck that's been, you know how children, they rub their favorite stuffed animal to the point where they're thin in some mm-hmm. places.
Yeah.
And she finds a stuffed duck with blood on it. And that, along with panties from different, you know, lady sizes and things like that. And that's what really sends her over the edge on that.
Mm-hmm.
So her car gets returned to the bar where she, at the payphone.
Right.
She makes the call. She gets a call and she thinks it's a trap, but they say her car is there. So big driver basically had driven her car and just dropped it and left it for gone.
Right.
And she goes and picks up the car and meets this wonderful woman who in the movie is played by
Joan Jett.
Exactly. How I was like,
totally bizarre.
That was so fucking awesome. Yeah. I was like, no way.
And
I loved
actually,
it.
Go ahead and finish. Cause I'm kind of unhappy, not unhappy. I'm disappointed in one way about that. But
okay.
Yeah.
So she, I'm disappointed in the movie book version because yeah. I like the way that the timing was in the book. It
yeah.
made sense. In the movie, they just kind of put it together.
And she doesn't get in the story, in the novella, there's this whole ending where she goes back and she actually kind of becomes, I wouldn't say friends, but acquainted with the woman, tries to figure out why the bartender helped her. It's
yes.
because she was raped as a kid.
And lost an eye.
And lost an eye to it and her own story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wonder if it was cut purely, again, we're talking about a TV movie, so it could only
it was
be
on Lifetime.
A certain number of minutes long.
Right, oh, that's
so
true,
they
yeah.
might have scripted that whole ending
right.
and Joan Jett may have shot it, but we'll never get to see the kind of, you know, theatrical release of this
right.
thing. Because that was a pretty cool
that was.
Story. It was mm-hmm. a nice little tie-up for
it was
for
because
that character
the last,
and,
she know. Thinks she's covered all Tess the main character thinks that she's covered all bases and then realizes that when she had gone to pick up her car that her face had been busted up and that the bartender had seen it, so that's mm-hmm. the loose end. So she decides, fuck it, I'm going to confess to the bartendress, and she calls her
you of all people saying bartendress. I'm,
it's hilarious,
I'm,
right?
That's terrible.
It's
that's
the
just
worst.
Terrible.
Okay. Well, at least I didn't say mixed fucking ologist. So.
I like that better.
Okay. Mixed fucking ologist. She calls her and just starts leaving this rambling message of confession on her answering machine. Went back when they had answer machines. And the girl picks up and says, hey, I'll meet you in the park. It's a public place. And then when she meets her at the end of the novella, she says, look, we're in public. You can't kill me because I have it on tape. I'm going to burn the tape. Here's what happened to me. Don't hug me. Don't touch me. This is not a sisterhood thing. I get where you're
yeah.
coming from. I'm not going to tell my gran, which is your number one fan. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to, you know, talk to the papers or the cops about anything. And so, and that's how it ends. And it's in that way, it is that strong sisterhood.
Yeah.
Bond,
and
but,
I was having read the novella before I saw the movie or mm-hmm. re-saw it. I think I saw this years ago.
I never had. I
yeah,
was excited. When sent
I
it to
was
me.
Disappointed that we didn't get that nice
yeah,
story
that
from the bartender, that nice little turn.
Tie up at,
yeah,
yeah. At the end.
But it didn't. And again, I wonder actually if it was more about timing mm-hmm. and editing than anything else, because there was nothing particularly graphic in there that they hadn't already covered. I mean, they already done a rape story and
right.
you know, three murders and all that.
Well, in the book, there's more than just the three girls. They only say three in the movie, but
yeah.
there was a lot more bodies in there. And, you know, she's trying to figure out how to tell the cops or get these bodies, you know, back to their families. It's just these missing people.
Yeah. And it ends that she basically gets away with it.
Yeah,
and
she fucking gets away with murder.
Both,
and that's the
versions.
Great revenge part of
yeah,
it, is that she kills the mother who set her up. She kills the two sons, who one who's the rapist and the other one who is the accessory.
Accessory or accomplice or partner or whatever.
She called him an exhibitionist or something like that, where it was like, a voyeur, I'm sorry.
A voyeur, said, yeah.
A voyeur, yes.
Yeah.
I apologize. I went the opposite way with that.
One or the other. Two sides of the same ugly coin.
I guess I'm talking about the way I am as a person, just more of an exhibitionist than a voyeur.
And I'm more of a voyeur. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying? God. It is one, and it's, you know, like many really novellas, there's no supernatural element.
No,
there's
none. Full Dark No Stars is very much...
That's true. Actually, all of those things are non-supernatural. They're thrillers.
They're thrillers, and they're really good.
Yeah. And again, this was kind of the rebirth of the novella period, mm-hmm. where it was now, of course, everybody's writing them. His son, Joe Hill, did a series of novellas called Strange Weather, and they're great. And now it's a viable economic decision for writers to come out with two or three or four novellas in a book, where up until King started doing it with different seasons, you couldn't get away with that. Mm-hmm. So, and it was a strong piece all the way through. I wanted to talk a little bit about the cast and about the people behind it, just because I think some interesting stuff. It was written by Richard Christian Matheson. Matheson's dad, Richard Matheson, wrote many of the original Twilight Zone episodes. Their families were friends with the Kings. They were well known.
Right.
Richard Christian Matheson.
Didn't we talk about this before?
Yeah, we've talked about it before. Okay. And he actually wrote one of the Nightmares and Dreamscapes.
Yes.
Battleground, which we've talked about before.
Yeah, our Christmas episode.
Yeah, so this was his second cut at a Stephen King piece. Clearly he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
The thing is written is very tight, very economical. Again, I wonder how much more there would have been if it had been a theatrical release movie, had been on cable a couple of years later when you could get more graphic.
Right.
I compare this to 1922, another novella, and how much more grim and graphic it is
than this.
Almost soft focus compared to that.
That's very true.
Though the stories are not similar, but they're equally graphic and equally gritty.
Mm-hmm.
It was directed by a guy named Michael Salomon, who also directed the TV version of Salem's Lot. And, as it turns out, two of the other Nightmares and Dreamscapes. Not Battleground, but two others. There are a lot of, like, King veterans in this thing. Actually, many of them.
I think Frank Darabont, and I think that... before we go into the actors. I think that Frank Darabont, and I think that Matheson, I think that those are two that he should stick with. They really know how to take his work and make it...
They have
shine.
Richard Christian's
on the
screen. Pretty old these days. He's still working, but not as much. And of course, Darabont, we don't really know what happened
to him. He disappeared.
He's kind of withdrawn from this stuff, unfortunately. And then, of course, Maria Bello. Oh, golly, I've been watching her since she was ER 20 years ago.
Oh,
that's
my
where
God.
She first showed up.
Really,
she did a great short-lived NBC version of the British show Prime Suspect. She was the lead in that, really, again, gritty cop show stuff.
Okay.
She's great. And she's done another Stephen King movie. She's the female lead in Secret Window.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my fucking God. You're right.
Yeah. And then...
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And the other big...
That was a good one.
Talk about good old Joan Jett, which is amazing to see.
Joan Jett. I was just so stoked when I saw her name in the credits. I was like, no fucking way. I knew exactly what character she was going to play. And I was so
happy. I thought it was
like
going to be a cameo or something. I was amazed to see her get it.
Yeah, it was perfect.
And then the woman who plays the mom, who plays Norma.
Her name is...
Olivia Dukakis.
No, that's not her.
Oh.
Olivia Dukakis is in it, but she plays the old biddy. She plays the old biddy Vision, and really kind of a walkthrough. Anne Dowd is the name of the woman who plays the other woman. She's actually an interesting actress. She's also done another Stephen King movie.
Oh, yeah.
She's an apt pupil.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that in so long.
But God, she's also, she just finished a long run in Handmaid's Tale. She's done a lot of really interesting stuff. Clearly, she was really strong.
I love it.
And a nice piece. So they've all had bits and pieces of Stephen King. They're all and she's also been in other movies with Michael Salomon before. So they've all kind of in the mix.
It's soup.
Yeah, you see it. These people all know their shit, and they put together a good, solid middle road movie.
A good, solid middle road movie is the actually perfect way to describe it because it. Is. I mean, that's just exactly what it, that's completely perfect.
Yeah, and it's satisfying in that.
Yeah.
You get
that revenge feel, you know.
There is, to me, a strangely dated feel about it because of the tech more than anything.
Yeah.
The payphones. She does have a cell phone, but the signal's bad.
Yeah.
And then there's a payphone.
And
then
there's
Tom-Tom and all that stuff.
Right.
And there were some interesting
Tom-Tom.
Little bits, too, that I didn't think... She doesn't have a boyfriend or an ex-husband or anything,
yeah.
Nor a girlfriend.
That's what I love about it. It's like she's just her. She's happy and content and living her life and not thinking that all of a sudden the needle is just going to scratch all the way across and fuck everything up for her.
The other thing Maria Bello did that I really love that everyone should see is a movie called The Cooler. Have you ever seen The Cooler?
No.
Oh. She did it with the guy who's now the lead in Shameless.
I can't stand that show.
I don't like...
It's too tense.
I like him.
Yeah, okay.
And he plays a sad sack guy in Vegas who whenever... If somebody's having a hot streak at the mm-hmm. table, he comes and stands next to him, and the guy starts to lose. And this is actually apparently a thing in Vegas. You hire guys like this
no.
who can kill a room.
You're kidding.
And they're called the coolers. So he gets hired to be a cooler.
How the fuck does that happen?
It's a supernatural bit. You know, it's a shtick.
Okay.
But whether it's luck or whatever else. But he is like the best cooler ever. So he gets hired by the mob who runs the casino to... When people get too lucky, you just send the cooler
Jesus
in.
Jesus Christ.
All he does is stand next to him or stand in the same room and they just start to lose.
See, I would actually make an excellent cooler because I swear to God, okay, so I don't care for Vegas and gambling is not fun, although I do have a couple of friends that I enjoy going to casinos with. But here's the thing. I can pick a machine and point at it and say, I have a feeling about that. And I've had friends win thousands of dollars. And this is just off machines, not even like a table or whatever.
That's amazing.
But here's the thing. If I touch the machine, it's fucking over.
It's done. Yeah.
You're done. If I touch it at all, like I had an aunt who used to say, oh, you're my lucky charm. And I would go with her to the casinos and my grandmother. And my grandmother didn't gamble either. So we would just sit there and talk while Grace would just go off and do her thing. But I would pick the machines for her. She'd do fine. But she wanted me to touch the machines. The second I touched the machines, nothing.
Now, my dad was an incredibly lucky card
player,
mostly.
So I should make money as a cooler,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you could do it as a cooler. Yeah, just go in and touch the...
touch the table.
My dad was really... I mean, he won at poker. I know that there were many months where he made the mortgage or the rent.
That's fucking cool.
Playing poker, hustling people
good for
in poker.
Him.
And pool. I am the exact opposite. I could go to Vegas and you could bet that I would lose. I can lose more times just cutting cards than statistically possible. I'll lose two-thirds of the time, but you're not supposed to be able to. I have anti-luck in the deal.
That's interesting.
But anyway, and Maria Bello is the cocktail waitress that the cooler falls in love with, who's also going out with the gangster who beats the crap out of her. She's really excellent in this movie. It's a little indie movie called The Cooler. It's available all over the place. Bello hasn't changed a bit.
She's
in 20
still
years.
Equally as fucking gorgeous as I've ever seen
and she's
her.
She's over 50 years old now.
That's insane.
Yeah, and she was just hitting 50 when she made this 5 years ago.
I talked to her cosmetic surgeon.
Yeah, I just think she's one of those people that looks that way. I mean, she looks tightened up. She just looks like she's always looked.
Great
and she
jeans.
Brings a real realism and gravitas to this whole project. She doesn't get weepy. She doesn't get weak at any point. I'm just real impressed. So it's a nice little piece. I don't know that we've got a crap load more to say about it.
That was basically it.
I would put it as a solid B on the...
Before we wrap up real quick, though, I do want to talk about the audiobook reader. When we did A Good Marriage, I ended up wanting to listen. And what they did with the audiobook is they had the same guy that read 1922, which we already covered.
Right.
He reads the other one, too. Both those stories are from a male perspective.
Right.
A Good Marriage and Big Driver, same female reader.
Yeah.
Awesome. She did such an amazing job. And I thought it was so cool to have... I didn't realize that both those stories, two male, two female perspectives, it hadn't
never
really
even occurred to me till now. Until you mentioned it.
Good. Okay, good. I like when I can bring a little insight to Brad's brilliant brain. she just did such an awesome job reading it. She did with both of them, A Good Marriage and with that. So I strongly suggest anyone who is interested in Full Dark, No Stars, but doesn't want to sit down and just like read it, even though they're really fast reads. Listen to the audiobook because both readers do such an insanely good job. I loved him.
Well, and we've talked about this before, too, is that, you know, the audiobooks for King run the gamut from, and when King does them himself, not really good at all.
How dare you, Brad?
They aren't. I mean, he did okay.
The most recent one was awesome.
Elevation was okay. But mostly in comparison to the ones he'd done before that were really bad. But then they go all the way up to, you know, Michael C. Hall doing Pet Sematary,
right.
Which is still, you know, it's
best.
A performance
it really
apart
is.
From the book itself.
He's so
and
good.
And these are really strong. Just like Will Patton doing The Outsider, which is excellent. And some of these others have been good. Some have not been so good. The Christine one was...
Yeah,
and I know we're both listening to the audiobook of The Stand now for our future deal. And the guy, and I'll get his name when we do that, is excellent.
He is so good.
For 150,000 hours.
I know. Oh, yeah. Just let me just put this out there for you, Brad. Fuck you. Okay, like the Langoliers, except for way better, but way longer. Who the fuck decided to do the stand? I ask you, sir. Yeah. I'm going to take my glove off and slap you, and let's do a duel tomorrow at noon find out who the fuck picked the stand. It's really good.
Because people really liked when we did The Shining, which is another one of the big, well-known books, and eventually we're going to have to do these.
Well, I mean, it's the guy, I'm way ahead of Brad.
Yeah, way ahead of me. I'm like barely into
it. You've had a lot going on, but yes, I'm way into it. And the... how do you read? Okay, so each part, and I'm only at the end of part four right now, each part of this audiobook is 8+ fucking hours long. Each fucking one. It was so cute. Brad was like, oh, here, I'll send you the first one. It's 7 hours. It's 7 hours and 59 minutes.
Didn't even notice.
Nice trickster move. I was like, God damn it, Brad.
I think there are 8 files in the thing.
Jesus. Okay. So
you're about halfway through. Yeah.
Well, I'm at the end of four, so I'm 2/3 maybe. Yeah. Way through. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm way behind. I think I may have to resort to actually reading the paper version of the damn thing.
Yeah, you read faster than me. Yeah, because when you are so good at multitasking, but to listen to the audiobook and do all the other things with editing and, you know, your books and travel.
The other thing is, I listened to it when I was on airplanes recently. Mm-hmm. But again, for a normal book, which is normal novel, runs between 15 and 20 hours of audiobook. This thing is...
it's
three
six
or four
parts,
times that, 65
no,
hours,
I'm sorry,
80
eight
hours.
Parts of
yeah.
8 hours.
Yeah.
It's like, fucking insane.
It was 65 to 70 hours of listening.
And not only that, but I've fallen asleep to this so many times because the guy's voice is just so good. It kind of reminds me of Scoot from Sleep With Me, but different. I mean, not like all up and down and everything, but where he just tells the story and Stephen King goes on his side tangents and the guy's voice is just so, and I've just fallen
and
asleep so many times.
He does
a really good
accents
job.
As well, but he doesn't go over the top with them.
Right.
We'll be talking about this again with the stand, but the point is that some of the audiobooks are even as much fun to listen to as the books are to read.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's very,
it's a performance
kind of,
in and of itself.
It's very catch as catch can. What I should probably do, and we should do a sit down and make a list of the best audiobooks we've done so far, and we'll put it on the site. Because there are maybe half a dozen that I would say, yeah, if you like audiobooks or you want to get into them, here are great ones to start with.
I never got into them until you started giving them to me. And I just, this really is the greatest present ever because I'm like, I go and I walk Buddha, my dog, and we're walking around. I'm able to listen to this. And then I get to a good part and I'm like, Buddha, this walk is going to go to 4 miles tonight. Like, that's all there is to it. We're walking 4 miles because I look at my steps later and I'm like, yes. So that's how it's been kind of with the
stand.
It's
good for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and also I should mention there is one.
My ass is getting in really good shape.
One in the and it's only in the movie, I believe. I don't think it's in the novella. One multiversal reference. One tiny one.
Okay.
What, do you have it?
No.
When she's concerned about her reputation getting dragged to the mud, she mentions that it could be on Inside View. Which is
if you go back to our early episodes, Brad does a really excellent, don't laugh and shake your head. Inside View is the tabloid magazine of the King Multiverse.
It is. It's all over the place. And it's in half a dozen different places.
I cannot remember, for God's sakes, what episode you did that in. And in fact, we should go back in our... show notes and put
I think I was just looking for something to do it, but it's big in Dead Zone. It's in Night Flyer. It's mentioned
Richard
Thither
D's
and Yon.
And
Rick D's, the writer, not the guy on the radio. It's in Elevation. It's mentioned in Elevation.
Yeah.
So it's still around.
It's a thing.
And I think Matheson slipped it in because I don't think it's in the novella, but it's definitely in the movie.
It's in the movie.
And if we're going to have even that, that's the tiniest sliver of multiversal.
I love it. It's just that splinter of multiverse.
Yeah. So it probably took place. It also does not take place in Maine at all.
No.
There's really nothing else that connects it to the larger story.
But it's there. It's a Stephen King story, and it's a good read. It's a good listen to, too.
Yeah, and if you're looking for something to watch one afternoon or one evening, and you don't, nothing that's going to challenge you completely, but will keep your deal and watch a great performance by Maria Bello.
Yeah, and if you read the book, I mean, you're going to be upset. like you just can't help but not, you know, just this woman, everything that she goes through, but the fucking payoff at the end is so good. And it's not just like at the very end, it's like what happened to her and the rape is in the very beginning. Yeah. And after that, it's just her way her mind works and how a real person would go about revenge. It's kind of, you know, I mean, it's not like this woman, she writes mystery stories for old ladies and about an old lady knitting club. And it's like, but she somehow does this just real simple, exacting plan of revenge. And I fucking love fucking revenge. I love it.
That's true. That's true. Well, I will, I think you have my password to get onto Shudder, so you can.
I do.
You can watch. You can watch Revenge if you really want to go that way. And meanwhile, we're gonna continue for at least one more week into the automotive world here, because I'm going to force Kat to watch a Stephen King movie she's never seen before. She and I are good together.
We're going to watch it together.
Yeah, we're going to watch Maximum Overdrive.
I don't know why he's laughing, but I have a feeling it's going to be terrible. Soon,
very soon, you'll know. And that's what we'll be talking about next. And then the week after that, if I've done my calendar right, is the week that we will be going to see Pet Sematary. What we plan on doing is going to the theater, seeing it, coming straight back here to the bedroom.
And get the covers on.
Yep. And record our. We probably won't even talk about it in the car. We won't allow it.
We can't.
Yeah, we will have to talk about something else.
We can just look at each other with the eyes.
That's right.
The eyes.
I almost said anything. But until then, thanks, folks. It is great to be back. We have missed you and missed doing this.
We have really missed doing this. I feel like I'll have more structure back in my life if this is, you know, I can keep doing what I love, which is hanging out with my friend and talking about my favorite author.
And I ain't kidding. Every Monday from now on, you're going to see one of these damn things one way or another.
We swears these.
Yeah.
Swears these.
Plenty to do. So thanks, and we'll see you next week.
Next week.
And that about does it for Big Driver. To fill in a few blanks from our very faulty memories, The Cooler, that nifty little movie with Maria Bello in it, also stars William H. Macy. Yeah, that's the guy from Shameless and a million other great things. And it's for rent on Amazon or YouTube for $3.99 or on the HBO add-on on Hulu. The name of the audiobook reader of Big Driver and A Good Marriage is Jessica Hecht, who you'd recognize as an accomplished character actress if you saw her. She played one of Walter White's rich friends and former benefactors on Breaking Bad, and she is one of the best audiobook readers for King, like we said. Then there's Revenge, that ultra-violent but oh-so-satisfying revenge pick that stars Matilda Lutz. It's still on Shudder if you want to go catch that. And meanwhile, Big Driver itself is available to rent on Amazon for $3.99, or you can buy it there for under $10, too. And it looks like you can watch it for free on YouTube, so you might want to check that out. Next week, it's Maximum Overdrive, for better or worse, mostly worse. And spoiler alert for that one, expect plenty of heavy drinking. Please take a moment to go on over to iTunes and subscribe, rate, and review us. We want everyone in God's creation to find us and enjoy this. And please drop us a note yourself at darkmultipod.com or on Instagram or Twitter, where we're also at darkmultipod. Or even try darkmultipod@gmail.com. We'll answer anything to anybody. You can find Brad's writing on Amazon under Brad Munson, or on Twitter or Instagram as The Brad Munson. Hey, the regular name was taken. I mean, thanks, other Brad. And as usual, as always, the beautiful and haunting theme music for this little cast is from the astonishing musician, composer, performer, etc., Chrisanthi Tan. And truthfully, there's no better way you can spend your time than going to find her at chrisanthitan.com, on Spotify as Chrisanthi Tan, where she has her own channel, or over on Patreon, where you can kick in a couple of bucks and get the full treatment, and it's worth every penny and then some, any way you find it. That's Chrisanthi, as in most of the flower minus the mum, and Tan, as in the truly attractive shade of light brown. Thanks again for listening, stay in touch, and next week, come on back for Maximum Overdrive. Until then, stay safe, keep your head up and your shoulders back, and remember, keep it unreal.
Sorry.
Oh my God.
Like a jackass. Good Christ. Oh my God. Don't make me choke on my spit, Brad, from laughter over a serious book.
Serious book.